Fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force Corp., One Family, One Mission, first responders helping each other, and our sponsors, Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for fire service tech training, and by the Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. And our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Center, saving the lives of America's heroes, Nestabars, the amazing new hand tool for the fire service, EFT Corporation, 40-plus years of innovation in donation and payment processing solutions. The Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004. The Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The 5-Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now. Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Glad to have you with us, and we are glad to be with you. My guest today is a returning guest, well qualified to be here multiple times, a great leader in the American Fire Service today, and that is Chief Gary Ludwig. He'll be with us in just a few moments. If you enjoy the podcast today and you'd like to hear more, you can go to our website at www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.com. org, and just click on the word podcast across the top menu, and that will take you to our entire library of over 160 episodes of Five Alarm Task Force. And while you're on our website, on that front page, that homepage, or on our about page, you can sign up for our newsletter. It goes out about 4 or 5 times a year. We don't send spam. We don't sell or give away your email address. We protect it as much as we can under the law. And if you ever want to unsubscribe from the newsletter, all you have to do is just send us an email with the word unsubscribe in the subject line. And the email contains little updates. We're going to have one coming out in the next week or so about the podcast, about our nonprofit, Five Alarm Task Force Corp., what we're doing for it to raise funds and how you can help us, the blog, etc. All that latest news is in the newsletter. So you can find that there just by signing up. If you follow us on Facebook, and boy, the end of last week, I was on Facebook for the first time in maybe a week, and the likes are there just pouring in. I'm trying to get back to all of you and say thank you and inviting more of you to join us. And we just hope you'll do. Continue to like us on Facebook, and we'll try to get there as often as we possibly can. Now, if you listen to us, by the way, to what this audio podcast on a podcast platform like iTunes, Spotify, Audible, etc., most of them provide you an opportunity to leave a review. Now, why is that important to us? Well, yeah, we'd like to know that, to see that people enjoy the podcast. That's important. But even more important than that is that those platforms, most of them, use an algorithm of those positive reviews to place us in search results. So if somebody else is searching for our podcast, the more better reviews we have, the higher up in that search result we will be. So we ask you to take a few moments and do that for us, and let's leave a couple of stars or a nice review, and that'll be a big help to us and others who are searching for us. And finally, right now we're out of stock in our store, but we are putting together a new order, and we're going to make something special in the announcement. So I'm going to ask you to stay tuned for later on in the podcast when we get to the My View segment, which is usually after the last segment with our guest, and hear about some of the changes forthcoming for our store and for your, how we can help you with a donation to our nonprofit and at the same time give you something in return for doing so. So that's coming up all in a few minutes. So as usual, we're going to ask you to stand by for a couple of minutes, and I'll be right back right after these words with our guest, Chief Gary Ludwig, in just a moment. We'll be right back. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 Thermography Certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training? Well, here's their tentative schedule for May and June. May 1st, Instructor Thomas Anderson will offer an 8-hour Max Firebox Burn and Learn Thermal Imaging training at the Amboy Extrication Fire Conference in Illinois. And May 1st and 2nd, Bridgeport, West Virginia Fire Expo. Instructors Andy Starnes and Joey Baxter will offer 4 2-hour sessions of the Tactical 360 Enhancing Fireground Strategies and Tactics class. This event is sponsored and in partnership with Interstate Rescue. June 22nd to the 25th, Insight Fire Training will be conducting 2 days of operations in-service live fire training for the Poudre Fire Authority in Colorado. And June 28th to 30th, Instructor Andy Starnes will be a guest speaker in Las Vegas at the Waste 360 Expo. He will be sharing how thermography, thermal imaging solutions are being used to prevent and fight fires in waste and recycling facilities. Please be sure to check their website, InsightTrainingLLC.com, or their Facebook page for registration and additional details. Remember, Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for TIC training. The Firehouse Tribune, where inspiration was forged by those who came before us, opening the doors for us to build a path to share our mission with the rest of the emergency service world. With a small, tight-knit team of first responders dedicated to sharing experiences and knowledge, we constantly strive to provide our followers with thought-provoking content from all aspects of emergency services and life. Our contributors speak at top fire and EMS conferences in the country. They have been guests on numerous fire service podcasts and will even come and speak at your firehouse or event. Interested? Visit their website, www.thefirehousetribune.com, and find them on Facebook using The Firehouse Tribune, and on Twitter at FH Tribune, and on Instagram, FH Tribune. We live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life as well. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We look forward to hearing from you soon. Until next time, work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to have you with us. If you're watching us on the video on YouTube, thank you for joining us on the YouTube video. And if you're listening to the audio podcast, always great to have you back with us. Today, my guest is a chief that's well-known nationally. He's become a friend and a great supporter of the podcast, and that's Chief Gary Ludwig. The chief is the immediate past president of the IAFC and currently serves as the fire chief of the Champaign, Illinois Fire Department. He is a well-known author and lecturer who has 40 years of fire, rescue, and EMS experience. His most recent book is entitled Fully Involved Leadership, and we're going to be discussing that a little bit later on. Additionally, he's a devoted proponent of firefighter health and wellness, and we're going to talk about his campaign while he was the president of the IAFC that he continues today. Chief Ludwig started his career with the city of St. Louis at age 18, just 2 months out of high school, rising through the ranks and retiring as the chief paramedic of the St. Louis Fire Department after 25 years of service. He has also served 10 years as deputy fire chief for the Memphis Fire Department, managing their EMS system. Chief Ludwig previously served on the EMS executive board for the International Association of Fire Chiefs for 22 years, with 6 years as the chair. He is also a member of the IAFF EMS Standing Committee and has written monthly column for Firehouse Magazine for over 20 years. He has a master's degree in business and management and has been a licensed paramedic for over 38 years. He has written over 500 articles for professional publications such as Firehouse Magazine, Fire Rescue, Fire Engineering, GEMS, and EMS World Magazine. He has also been invited to speak in over 250 professional EMS or fire conferences or seminars, such as Fire Rescue International, FDIC, Firehouse Expo, EMS Today, and EMS Expo. He is the co-author of several books and is the author of Blood, Sweat, Tears, and Prayers, Firefighting and EMS in Some of the Toughest Cities in America, and Welcome to the Butterbeck School of Mismanagement, the business school that creates terrible leaders. In 2014, he was awarded, and deservedly so, the James O. Page EMS Leadership Award. Chief, it's a pleasure to welcome you back to Five Alarm Task Force.
It's outstanding, Steve. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. I really appreciate that.
Well, as I said, it's well-deserved. You've been on several times. Every time you're on, we have a great spike in the listenership. And I think it's because of, for the better, best word, is the character, who you've been. I've been lucky enough to follow you since you started writing in Firehouse Magazine way back when I was the little tyke, about 77 when I started.
Wow.
And I would, when that magazine would come to the station, I was one of those guys who would try to grab it as it came out of the mailbox to read it.
Cool.
And read those articles and learned a lot. It helped guide me. Some of those articles helped guide me when I was hired by Guilford County EMS as a fill-in, because the paramedics liked working with me from my fireside. And I learned from some of those articles about how to be a better person taking care of a patient that you don't even know.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I really enjoyed my time writing. I wrote for Firehouse for about 22 years, so I really enjoyed that.
Well, I think it's been one of those two great guiding lights of trades in any industry, that we're lucky to have both of them to serve the American Fire Service and International Fire Service as well. So let's start, if you will, because it's been a part of almost every podcast at some way or another in the past year, of your stand and a great stand that you took on firefighter health, wellness, and fitness for duty, as well as, of course, the cancer and the behavioral health initiatives. But when you took office, you were on just before you actually took office, you shared with us that you needed to get a strong message out to the fire service about firefighter health. And you did that with a great PSA that we now, we share now on every single podcast. And let's talk about that a little bit, please.
Sure. It's a little bit of a long explanation, so just bear with me. But I even though I'm in my 60s, I still love strapping on an air tank, and I still love what we do. And when I have the opportunity to train with my guys, I go train with them. So I came here in 2014, and in 2015, we were doing some live burns down at our academy, and I strapped on my air tank and looks like a whole row of taxpayer type of commercial structures. And we have the ability to either live burn in there or we can just smoke it up real good. And so we smoked it up real good and doing, some tick, practicing some down firefighters and looking for them, calling the Maydays and searching with the ticks and doing the other things you would do under circumstances like that. And so I put my gear on, strapped my tank on, put my mask on. I went in on the first floor, got zero visibility, just kind of watching the guys through my own tick and watching what they're doing and observing. And I walk out, go up one flight of stairs, walk up the second flight of stairs to walk into the second floor. And I got to tell you, Steve, it was like you took every ounce of energy I had and drained it out of me. I got inside that door and I could barely move. And I said, I'm not going any further. I said, I'm too old. I weigh too much. I haven't been taking care of myself. I need to get out of here. So I walked down the steps, tried to walk about 75 feet to my car until the operations guy outside who's running the scene. I'm too old and too fat for this. And I could barely get to my car. Got my gear off, put it in. A week later, I'm in a cath lab. Never had a heart attack, but I had 90% blockage in my right coronary artery. So I started noticing this pattern of people in our profession who die and the things that they said or did prior to that death. They said, I don't feel well. I don't feel right. There's something wrong with me. And what do we tell them to do? Oh, just go home, go back in the bunk hall and lay down. And they wind up dead. And so we got to change this paradigm. We got to change this thinking about how we treat our own. If a patient were to walk in or a citizen were to walk into your firehouse and said, I don't feel well, I don't feel right, something wrong, you wouldn't tell them to go back and home and lay down. You would work them up. You would at least put a monitor on them. You would take their vital signs. You probably try to talk them into going to the hospital. We got to treat our people better. I've known of cases, and unfortunately, where they've told people to go home and they find them dead later. There was one in Michigan where a captain was found, went home, didn't even make it home, didn't even leave the parking lot. They found him dead later in his car in the parking lot. There was just yesterday, a fire chief died at lunch. Mm-hmm. There is a predictive, for the most part, most of these, there is a predictive event that occurs prior to the event, and that is the cardiac event. And that is that they say, I don't feel right, I don't feel well. And so my campaign was, if you don't feel well, don't make it your farewell. And thanks to AMR, who helped finance that message, and also Pulse Point, they both helped finance that message. We kicked that off and had several PSAs. We had videos. We did massive mailings. We tried to get that message out. And now that I'm not the president of the IAFC anymore, my term has ended. The Safety, Health, and Survival section of the IFC has taken on that challenge and taken over that campaign. And so I'm grateful for them for doing that. And that's what that it's all about. Long explanation. Not so, cool. We got the changes. 42% approximately every year of firefighter deaths are cardiac events. It's the largest event that kills us out of anything else. It doesn't matter if it's crashes or if it's, you know, a wall collapsing on somebody or whatever our line of duty deaths are. If you were to look at categories, cardiac events is the largest category every year, approximately 42. It varies, 42 to 45% of all deaths.
Well, having been in a situation where I did work at a scene when I was up in the Syracuse area, it was a October day, strangely it was 84 degrees, and we had a van over the down the ravine of the interstate. And it was one of those calls where multiple fatalities, multiple injuries, and we had to use ropes and the baskets to go down and get back up again. We had to set up whole teams. And 84 degrees, we were in bunker gear, and finally we took our jackets off. And after a couple of hours, because it came in while I was at the station at lunch, I went back to my office, and I knew I wasn't feeling well that rest of the afternoon. So when my lessons finished, I called my wife and said, I'm going to stop at the firehouse on the way home. She goes, okay, why? I said, I got to get there. Well, I walked in and one of our paramedics was there. And I said, I'm not feeling well. And I don't know. I'm just not myself. And I've never been this way. So we started a workup and he set the EKG, which again was only a lead two back in those days. And he called the chief on call, and the chief said to him, he says, hey, just because he's a firefighter doesn't mean he's immune to anything. Work him up just like you'd work up any other walk-in to the station. They did, took me in, and it turned out I had sweated out almost all my sodium and potassium. And I was getting a little tiny arrhythmia because I didn't have enough potassium in me. So they hung a couple of bags of lactated ringers and normal saline. And, 4 hours later, I was able to go home. But the doctor said it's a good thing that you came in when you came in. And that was back in 1983.
So even back then already.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's there. I was in much better condition than I am at the age I am now. I think most of us are. We're better conditioned when we were younger and go-getters then. But I think that it is so important that we use that message that you created and move it together with what I've been a proponent of when I started this a couple of years ago, was don't be the first domino. Don't be that first domino, because that's why my course that I'm actually writing up again for the open call for presentations for FDIC 22 is called The Elephant in the Firehouse. Mm. When ego gets in the way of passion, because I'm the big guy. I got to be on the nozzle every time. It's got to be me. I'm the first one through the door. Everybody knows in this crew, I'm the guy who goes through. But what happens when you already know you're not feeling well? You go through that door. Instead of opening the bale, you collapse in the middle of the door. Everything on that fire ground changes.
Yes.
Everything. All the dominoes start falling. And they're not falling in an arranged order. It's only up to the IC to make sure that the rescue goes on, but the firefighting goes on as well. And we just have to get, we're not supermen. We don't wear capes. We just do our jobs to the best of our ability. And we have to remember that we're all human and we have the same frailties as the people we go to take care of.
So what's interesting is what you just said, I'm going to quiz you. You probably felt differently than you have never felt before.
Oh, right? Up to that time, yeah, never.
Yeah, and that's what people describe as a feeling that they've never had before. Yeah, we've all been sick. We've all been there. We've all haven't felt well. But those that have survived, if you talk to them, they will tell you it is like a feeling that they have never felt before. And you just described that. You even said that.
Right.
And so that is something that we really, truly need to focus on, is that when people tell you, I don't feel well, you better listen to them. I don't feel right. There's something wrong with my body. Your body's sending you a message. And we can't ignore those anymore. We got to treat our people better.
Right. And I'm glad to hear the Safety, Health, and Survival Committee is working on this. It's a great committee. Mutual friends that we have, Todd LeDuc and Dan Kerrigan there, and they're carrying that. I've known Todd for 25 years, both in the Boston area, but we met down here in South Florida through a mutual friend. And he has always carried that message when he was the assistant chief at Broward County. He brought LifeScan in at least 10 years ago, if not longer there. And matter of fact, a week ago yesterday, we had our fire department here, Coral Springs Parkland Fire Department, come to our home to help install the baby seats in my daughter's and son-in-law's vehicles. And the gentleman who came out said that, just in this department, in our department, which I didn't know, that there were at least 15 people that went through LifeScan and had early detection and are all still working today in the fire service. And I think that all too often we do let our egos get in the way of our health, and we're concerned, well, I don't want anybody to think that I'm wussing out, and I got to be there. And we need more people with the understanding and more chiefs, and we know they're out there, but we don't hear about them. Unfortunately, these chiefs like you, who do care about the health and wellness of their firefighters and medics, and want to make sure that they are healthy and are not these, pardon the word, but the hard asses who would, we're going to dock you because we think you should have come back the next day after you took one sick day. And they're afraid of that. And we have to stop that culture as well and make sure that our firefighters know that if they don't feel well, get themselves checked. You have sick time coming to you, get yourself to use it. Because especially if you have a family to come home to, they want you back at the end of your shift.
Absolutely right. And, all profound words of what you're saying is absolutely correct. So, my message to your listeners is if you experience this, don't ignore it. I know we sometimes are in denial that it could happen to us, but it happens to us. And lastly, if it's happening to somebody else in your station, don't ignore it.
Exactly.
We got to change this thinking of telling someone to go back in the bunk hall and lay down, or tell them to go home. At a minimum, you should be putting them on a monitor to see what's going on.
Exactly. Exactly. I was lucky that in my case, they put it on and they didn't like the readings. And so they sent me off, and it was a good thing they did, because I was able to go home to my family at night.
Yeah. And I don't have to tell you, electrolyte imbalance like that, you could have thrown, some arrhythmias or something like that. And, you and I might not be speaking here right now.
Exactly.
I know you're about to have a grandchild, and you would have missed that joyous opportunity. So So it's interventions like that that we look back on and we go, wow, you know, just thankfully someone there was there to make the right decision for us.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So we're both on that same wavelength with health and fitness. And I think that part of what we're talking about does go back to one of your great topics, which is leadership. And there are many ways of looking at leadership. And as I reviewed pages in your book again, Fully Involved Leadership. And it's funny, when I received the book and I saw who the foreword was by, Chief Buckman has been a guest here too. And sure. I said, well, what a great person, what a great leader to ask to do that, a foreword for that, for this book, because he had a great podcast as well. And as I perused it again before today's interview, here's a great quote, one of the great quotes that I found. Whenever you are in a position of power and have the responsibility of taking disciplinary action against a firefighter, you better make sure your actions are justified and reasonable.
Absolutely. I can't stress that enough. When you're in a position of power, such as myself as a fire chief or other fire chiefs or assistant chiefs, division chiefs, battalion chiefs, captains, company officers, the ability and the position that you're in to take away someone's ability to feed their family, to put a roof over their head by impacting their job or taking pay away from them, you better be serious about what you're doing and be conscious of what you're doing and be justified in what you're doing. That this is just not a frivolous and capricious way of dealing with people. And I unfortunately have seen that. And so a lot of what's in my book is based on my experiences and what I've seen work and what hasn't worked, and even my own failures along the line of leadership. And it's realizing that didn't work, that I need to do something else. And unfortunately, I have seen employees who are outstanding employees make an at-risk decision or make some type of decision wanting to do the right thing, and they get suspended for a period of time. And I just don't agree with that. I'd rather us educate if they made a wrong decision, and it was not with, you know, with intent. It wasn't done with willful intent to do wrong. That I'd rather us educate, let's learn from that failure and make them successful for the future. Because I have seen marvelous employees who love what they do. They love their profession. These are firefighters that come to work every day enthusiastic. They do one thing wrong based on a decision that they made, that they thought they were making the right decision. And they get a 5 or 10 day suspension. And their attitude all of a sudden goes, you know what? Screw this place. I put my heart and soul into it every day, and this is how they treat me. I ain't putting out the extra effort anymore. I'll just do what's required of me. I have seen marvelous employees that have been broken, and these firefighters go, I'm done. There was a company officer and a lieutenant in Memphis I saw this happen to. And 28 years in one of the busiest companies of South Memphis, and love what he did. His firefighters love working for him. And Memphis had this policy that if you had a rekindle, and you were the last company to leave the scene, there's a rekindle, that you got a 24-hour suspension. Well, his company, this house was getting it from one end to the other. And his company was the last one to leave the scene. And 12 hours later, this thing is just burnt to a crisp, this house. 12 hours later, there's a little flicker on a banister. A little flicker, Steve. And so they sent out fire investigation. They want to determine if it was a rekindle or if it was restarted by someone else again. And our fire investigation unit determined that it was a rekindle. And they took this lieutenant and they gave him a 24-hour suspension. And he said, you know what? Screw you all. I retire. We lost invaluable experience with what happened there. And long explanation. If you're in that position of power, discipline is not the only tool that you have when somebody does something wrong. There are other ways of helping our employees grow, mentoring them and coaching them to make them better firefighters, paramedics, EMTs, whatever you want to do.
That leads directly into what I was going to say, that from another quote here, firefighters do things for wrong reasons. Either they are unaware, unable, or unwilling. And that's where you just said the word that I was going to use, is that that's where leadership, good leadership, morphs into being a mentor to help that person who made that mistake.
Yeah. You know, one of our roles is that we're here to develop and grow those that are coming up behind us. You know, and when I entered working in St. Louis at age 18, you think I knew everything? Absolutely not. And today, 43 years later, I'll tell you, I don't know everything. Today, I'm a student today for everything that I do. I try to learn. I learned from you listening to you today. I'll be reading things today. I'm still a student. We should always continue to grow and develop, and especially those that are coming up behind us. Our positions of where we're at as leaders should be to help to grow and develop those that are coming up behind us. And so you're right. Firefighters will do things wrong for three different reasons. They're either unwilling, unaware, or unable. I call them the three uns. If they're unaware, I think I should teach them. If they're unable, I need to get them the tools to do the job. It's only if they're unwilling to do the job and they're consciously unwilling to do what's required of them, do I have to look at changing their behavior. One of those ways is using discipline. And so we always assume that if something is done wrong, that the employee did it with intent, and that's not the case. And we think that we have to correct behavior when there's no behavior to correct because they didn't do it with intent. And so we should educate, we should train, we should help develop and help them grow. And I have found that formula works exceptionally well when it comes to my firefighters. And I will defend that to others that think I should suspend somebody or do something, you know, to take away their pay. If they have not done it with intent and they have not done it with consciously wanting to do wrong, then I am going to defend them all the way.
Well, I'll tell you, there are lots of firefighters out there who say, gee, I wish my chief would read that book and learn that part of it. Because as we know, leadership varies from what, no matter what industry we're talking about. There are great leaders in industries, and there are mediocre, and there are poor leaders in industries. Unfortunately, we don't have the ability to really have bad leaders, because if we don't have good leadership in the fire service, that has a trickle-down effect to everybody, whether it's career, volunteer, wildland, doesn't make any difference. If you don't have good leaders directing you and helping you and educating you and teaching you, then it has a negative effect right down the line. And you don't have the enthusiasm, you don't have the dedication. And like you said, your crew at Champaign just love coming to work. And you might wear all the bugles, but you can also sit down at the kitchen table and just talk with them, one firefighter to another at the kitchen table, like you did 43 years ago. And that's the key. That's the key of a good leader. Someone who says, yes, I have the rank, but I'm just a guy or a gal just like you. I've been there. I know what you're going. I know what's doing on. Tell me what's bugging you, and let's see if we can figure out a way to get through it.
Steve, I like to tell. I remind my firefighters. I like to tell the chiefs when I talk at conferences and whatnot that I'm at the bottom of the organizational chart. I'm not at the top of the organizational chart. My firefighters are not here to serve me. I'm here to serve them. I'm here to make sure they have all the tools and all the resources, the education, the training they need, that when the bell hits, that they're going out and taking care of Mrs. Smith, our citizen in the community. And so they're not here to serve me, and I'm here to serve them. And I'm going to make sure that they have all those things in place. And I'm going to help them grow as part of being a servant leader to them and making sure they're developing and make sure they're maturing in their profession so that they can be their best when other people are at their worst.
That's a great point. And that, again, happens to lead. And by the way, folks, we did not discuss this in advance. I just told him I had some quotes from the book, so I didn't prep him in advance to know what's going on. This other quote here: if you ever get promoted in the same organization you have been working in, it is wise to seek out the person who held the position before you.
Absolutely. So instead of you trying to figure it out on your own, you should have a starting point. And the starting point is learning from the person that was in the position before you. If you've been promoted to the safety officer it's wise that you talk to the person who was the safety officer previous to you. And I will say that what they may tell you, you know, you shouldn't take exactly with a grain of salt. You should weigh it out, because maybe they were pretty bad at what they did as a safety officer. And so you should learn what they did and maybe do the opposite. So, but it's still a starting point that you should, instead of on the job training, you should learn your job. And one way of learning your job is to talk to the person who was in the position prior to you and just pick their brain, learn from them. And you will pick up things that you will be amazed at that you wouldn't even have thought of. And as I like to say, sometimes I've actually learned more from those bad leaders that I've worked for than the good leaders I've worked for. So the person who was in front of you might've been a bad leader. You can learn from them too.
Right. Right. And that also brings to mind the fact that, another push that we've seen now in the past couple of years, again, thankfully, is this push that, we need to, none of us really, I shouldn't say none of us, but very few of us, whether we were volunteers or career, went into the job with a lot of experience the first day we went in. Sometimes there's a multi-generational family. We see that in some of our big cities where great-grandfather and grandfather and dad, they all were firefighters. Okay. But a lot of us went in without it and had to be taught. And with that said, what you just brought up is an important point that we're trying to promote now, that number one, we can't condemn a generation without knowing them just because of what we've heard or seen in the press or on TV or something like that. Oh, this is this generation and they don't do this or they don't do that. Like that. Well, I've been free to admit that when I walked into that firehouse, volunteer firehouse, I could use basic tools, but I never used a drill. I never used an electric saw. I had no idea how to change oil in a car. I could put gas in my car and check the dipstick. And that was about it. I knew nothing about firefighting. But the young man I met the night we were voted in, who is still today, 44 years later, my best friend, I got one of those day guys, caretakers, became a mentor to us. And he saw that we were coming down, spending as much time as we could at the firehouse. And he said, well, then let's learn. Anytime you're here, you want to come down for lunch? Fine. I'll give you 50 minutes to eat lunch, and then we're going to learn something. Let's learn the compartments on the engine, and we'll do that together. And that's what we did. And we learned and learned and learned as much good because we had somebody who cared about us and wanted us to do better because they saw our dedication to what we're going to do. And I think you don't have to be you can be in any department. And we need to make sure that we are grooming mentors. We're hopefully grooming senior members of our department to help teach the new recruits who are coming in, whether they've been through the academy or not, or they're going go through a departmental training system. They're still going to be new and raw, and they need guidance and direction. And most of them are going to be hungry for that and will look for it. But we just have to have the people there who are willing to share with them, as you just said, as a chief, as you see it, as the chief's role is to help serve his or her members. We need to find experienced members. They don't even have to be an officer. They could just be the senior person in the house on that shift who's willing to say, listen, let me show you how to tie a bowline and or bite on a bowline and I'll help you tie it so you can pass the test on Friday.
Sure.
That's the kind of people we need, because they're going to help make tomorrow's fire department not only as good as today's, but maybe even better.
Absolutely. I mean, you hit on all the key points there, and there's not much more I can add, but you're absolutely right. It's what I've been saying all along is that we're here to, you know, it's no different than your mother or your mother or your father. They played that role where they nurtured you, they took care of you, but they also helped you develop and they helped you grow into the person that you are today. And so we're just almost an extension of the parental units. And the fact is that we're helping you continue to grow in your profession, in your career, and nurture and mature as an individual and as a professional.
Right. And that also, in the reverse, we also have to emphasize that every new recruit and every firefighter, new 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years in, always has to be open to learning. Because this business is changing too fast, and our society is changing too fast.
So I'm writing another book, and I'm going to pull it up here and pull up things that have changed. I've been a paramedic 40 years, and just the things that have changed since I've been a paramedic. If you can give me a second while you're talking there.
As you're pulling that up, I'll tell you that when I was really sick in November, I had a call into our nearest station is just a half mile from a house. They know I'm a former firefighter medic, and they know how our dog loves to sing to the queue when the engine comes by. Mm. And they came by and picked me up and took me to the hospital. And I said, I knew I was really dehydrated. And I said to them, do you guys still have to call fire control to start an IV? He starts laughing. He goes, how long have you been out? I said, probably longer than you've been in. He says, we haven't had to call fire control in 25 years. We can start an IV anytime we want. I said, okay, well, you're welcome to if you want to get me started now.
But, yeah, calling medical control anymore, those days are gone. You know, unless you've gone past your what's in your protocol. So, right. Those days are gone. Here, I'm doing a search. I know I'm going to. So let me just talk to you about the things that have happened since I've been a paramedic. You're right. This profession continually changes. Paramedics and firefighting constantly changes. So what I have seen during my career, and I've been a paramedic a little over 40 years now, is we've moved from 3 lead EKGs to 12 lead EKGs in the field. Saline locks are in place now. Mechanical CPR compression devices, CPAP, measurement of pulse oximetry, wearing of gloves. Someone sent me a picture the other day, back in the day, of riding on the rescue in St. Louis, and I didn't have gloves on the scene. Nobody had gloves on the scene because we didn't wear gloves back then. Writing patient care reports on computer tablets instead of on paper, where now you can Bluetooth all your data from your monitor defibrillator into your tablet. The wearing of body armor, use of hands-free defibrillation, stretcher loading systems, new adjunct airways other than intubation, end-tidal CO2 monitoring, rapid sequence intubation, intraosseous infusions, pacing, cardioversion, ultrasounds. There are fire departments that are doing ultrasounds out in the field now. Ventilators, video laryngoscopes, and new drugs, just to name a few that happened, all that has happened since I've been a paramedic. And so this profession, whether it's firefighting or whether it's paramedicine, continually changes, as you know, Steve. And so, you know, if you're not continually learning, you're going to be left behind.
Exactly. And I think we also have to stress the point that if you're going to be a student, you're going to have to understand that people have different teaching methods, whoever is going to be teaching you or mentoring you. Whether you were in the academy and you saw different teachers and, I like that one and I didn't like her, or I liked him and whatever. You have to understand that this is just like when you were in junior high and high school, that you have to, you know, you're not going to love every teacher, but you still have a responsibility to learn. And same thing here in the fire service. You're not always going to have a great teacher, but if that's their assignment or that's what they're working to do to work with you, be open to their personality, be good to them, and listen and learn. Because when you do, you improve. And that's one of the best things.
Isn't that not an amazing list of things that I just read off to you?
I spoke with that same medic about the stretchers. I said, you like these new electric stretchers? He goes, they're great. I said, yeah, we didn't have them in my day. He goes, you didn't? I said, no. And I said, he goes, what did you do when you had a 300-pound patient? I said, we grabbed four other firefighters to lift them into the rig. That's what we had to do.
And how many backs are gone now?
Mine.
Yeah, from people that didn't have the luxury of this type of device back in our day here, when we worked on the streets to speak of, you know, and how many people have been disabled and how many people have lost their backs and are suffering now because of that. And now look what we have in place to save people's backs.
Right.
It's amazing. When I put that list together, I'm like, oh my God, look at all the things that have happened in the 40 years that I've been in this profession, just in paramedicine. And then we look at firefighting, you look at tick cameras and some of the other technology that we have out there that, you know, we just, we just never had back in our day. You know, you had three-quarter boots, and, you know, now we're completely, almost fully encapsulated with, who wore even hoods back in the day? You know, now we have Nomex hoods. And so the list of stuff just goes on and on.
Well, that does bring us to another point that I want to touch on before we take a break, which is what's come up in the last 5 to 6 years about our gear. It's been a big headline for us all. And that's the PFAS and PFOS forever chemicals that we find that's in our gear. This is the gear that we put on. And what was really important to me is when I became in contact with Diane Carter and her husband from Worcester, Mass, and I'm from Framingham. So we were only a short distance apart, and her husband, Paul, and to learn that when they had these pieces tested, they had pieces back from 77. So you and I started right around similar times. I think maybe you were a little bit later than me, but 77 is when I started. So I was
77 is when I started too.
Yeah. So, and to think then that, you know, of course, different types of product was burning in those days. We had real wood furniture. We didn't have the plastics that we have today. Mm-hmm. But to think that these chemicals were being used in the gear that we put on to protect ourselves every day so we can serve the public, it has created quite a stir in the industry. But there are good leaders who are now working to help change that. And both from, you know, the IAFF had an amazing meeting at the beginning of the year with their motion that passed with a tremendous margin. And I think the message is out there now that if we're going to risk our lives as firefighters and paramedics to help other people, we know the risks that are involved in our job, but we don't want to come from inside. It can't be on the inside of our job, meaning the inside of our bunker gear that we wear.
Mm-hmm.
And, hopefully.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, hopefully we're beginning to see changes, because now if you look on social media, there are people who have, thanks to, as we go through this with some of these other headlines, that we're finding that we know that PFAS and PFOS, these forever chemicals, are not just in firefighters' gear. They're in our water, they're in our food, they're in our packaging and stuff like that. And so as a cohesive population of the world, we have to make an effort to get the companies to, you know, at least try to convince them to find safer methods of producing the same product without endangering the lives of even children and babies. You know, children and babies are having babies being born. They have found PFAS and PFOS in mother's milk and in the bloodstream of the babies, newborns. That's a pretty hard fact to accept.
Yes. Yeah, and so the IAFC is privileged to be working. Our safety, health, and survival section is privileged to be working with the IFF closely on this matter. And we've had several, you know, meetings with them as we move forward and try to understand what the bigger picture here is and how we can do going forward to safeguard all firefighters with the wearing of gear and PFAS in that gear, and also when it comes to the foam too. So,
oh, absolutely. Yeah, our department, our chief was a leading expert on flammable liquid fires back then. And we had countless 5-gallon pails of AFFF all over the department. And we had to build a storage shed for more that came in because of the demonstrations and stuff. Luckily, I never actually had to touch it. I never had an occurrence where I had to touch any PFAS or anything like that. I mean, any of the AFFF in those days. But, you know, that's changing as well. The industry has moved on and look at creating new versions of it that are safer for everyone to use. And that's the good result that we're looking for with this. All right. So we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of these great leadership quotes from Chief Ludwig and a couple of other topics that you may be interested in. If you're watching the video, you won't even know that there's a break listening to the audio. As always, we'll be right back right after these words. Please stay tuned. tones sound and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay, and head for the open front door, where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything! What the hell are you thinking? You see, it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face piece on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go to. Face peace on.
The physical and mental demands of a firefighter place major stress on our minds and body, and especially our heart. Far too many of our brothers and sisters in the fire and emergency service are lost each year due to cardiac arrest. In fact, statistics show that those of us active in this profession are much more susceptible to cardiac arrest than the general population. Too often, ignoring the warning signs is a fatal decision. Your body will definitely be signaling to you that something is wrong, a feeling that you have never had before. If you don't feel well, don't make it your farewell. Seek medical attention immediately. If someone under your command or in your unit is not feeling well, don't send them home. Don't send them to the bunk hall. Insist they get checked immediately. Let's change the culture in our profession, in our departments, of ignoring the warning signs our bodies are telling us. Visit IAFC.org to learn how.
This message is brought to you by the International Association of Fire Chiefs and this podcaster.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy, I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on, there's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses, but we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
Welcome back to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force with my guest, Chief Gary Ludwig. And the next quote, and you're going to see, you see this picture on your screen if you're watching the video. And this was based on a quote in his book, Fully Involved Leadership, that says, showing honor to firefighters who have accomplished something in their career with their families present takes extra work. And if you look at this collage that the chief is sharing with us, you can see what he does and has done, and let it be a great example for other departments as well, to share the great moments of your personnel. Chief, why don't you tell them a little bit about some of these pictures? I like the one down here where you present the helmet. I think that's the first one for new people coming on the job.
You know, our firefighters that are on probation, they're on probation for a year. And when they complete their probation, we celebrate their success. I celebrate their success. The department celebrates their success. And so they get a new helmet and a new shield that shows they're no longer on probation. So we have a small little ceremony, you know, and I present them with a new helmet and a new shield. And, you know, if you look at all the other pictures here, these are just multi. And this is not the only pictures I have. I have a whole host more. Or if I put them all on here, you wouldn't be able to tell because there'd be so many on there. They'd be so small. But I give out game balls for, you know, if one of my employees does something extraordinary that day, I give out a game ball. We celebrate that success. You know, you can see I'm pinning badges on people. So when they're newly promoted, I pin their badge on. And then we have a once a year award ceremony and a pinning ceremony where their families actually come. They choose to pin who they want the badges on. Oh. And I've seen some wonderful pictures and some wonderful pinnings where we have grandchildren pinning their grandfathers. I have grandfathers pinning their grandchildren as firefighters. I have children that are pinning their father. You know, it just, there is such heartwarming moments to watch this pinning ceremony where they're pinning their badge on and celebrating their success of what they've accomplished to become a firefighter or be promoted. You know, I give out chief's letters of recognition. Some of those are pictures up there. I hand out, we have different various levels of awards, including company citations. We have our Medal of Valor. We have our the Medal of Honor, the Medal of Valor. We also have unit citations. We have fire department commendations. We have a variety of levels of different types of awards. And so I strongly support that we should be praising and giving honor to those that have done something extraordinary within our career. We're so quick to criticize that we should also be praising when somebody does an excellent job and reaffirming that we appreciate what they have done and that we support what they have done that is so extraordinary and at least acknowledge that they've done something extraordinary.
Right. And well, you know, everybody loves to be appreciated. And sometimes when it's overlooked, it can be, we'll call it a downer. But to see a collage like this and to see how well your department, you and your department share in achievements of your members is probably one of the best things that any firefighter who's watching this video can see, is that there are people who care, really care about the job you do. And they want you to know that they care. And it's more than just, oh, thanks, Bill. You did a great job with that. Or thanks, Kathy. Nice job. And then they walk away and you go back to your shift and do your next run. This is something outstanding. And I'm really pleased to see it and glad.
Yeah, we also have awards for CPR saves. And I'm not talking about where you get a heartbeat back. I'm talking about where the person returns to a life of normalcy. They've actually been restored. Their heart was stopped. They weren't breathing, and they have been restored to a life enormously neurologically intact. We had 6 last year in this department, which wow. I'm very proud of our people. And so it's a pretty cool event, Steve, in that award ceremony, we give out those CPR saves, and we ask those people who have been saved to come back to the award ceremony, and they usually do. And to hear them get up and speak about how grateful they are to have another shot at life because of the people that intervene, our rescuers that intervene in their life, and to be reunited with them at this event. There's not a dry eye in the place usually.
I'm sure.
And then right about the time there's not a dry eye, we actually award or we give the person who's been resuscitated, we give them a new birth certificate, the date of their resuscitation.
That's amazing.
And anybody who wasn't crying then is certainly crying then. Crying before, they're certainly crying now.
Absolutely.
And, what it does is it's just a celebration of life. Mm-hmm. And it's also a celebration for our rescue, our people here who have really put in the effort to save someone's life. It's a reaffirmation that my training, my education, and all my efforts have paid off because someone life has been restored and they are so truly appreciative that they have given another shot at life.
That's wonderful. That really is. And you know, that also slides us right into what I've just nicknamed vitamin M, which is morale. Mm-hmm. And in the quote in the book, be fair with how you enforce rules, regulations, and standard operating procedures. You can kill morale in your company, your battalion, division, or fire department if you are not consistent with how you administrate policies. And this is a great example that this is how you build morale. You thank the people who have done something, achieved some sort of landmark in the department. And it really is such an amazing opportunity to see how happy people are with that. And yet, a wrong flip of the coin can kill that morale almost instantly.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And I'll tell you, that comes from experience or what I've seen. That what you see there is I worked for a fire chief in St. Louis that did not enforce the rules evenly across the board. Very biased about how he enforced rules. Some people could get away with whatever, and he turned a blind eye. And others were constantly under the grill and under the thumb. And where one person I know got shingles, one deputy chief I know in St. Louis got shingles because of the stress that he was under from this fire chief. And he says, Gary, I refuse to give him credit for giving me shingles. That fire chief is probably one of the worst fire chiefs in the history of the St. Louis Fire Department. And, you know, and it was proven out later when the mayor of St. Louis demoted him back down to deputy chief. And so, but that what you see written in that book is I actually physically observed that you need to administrate rules fairly and evenly across the board. And you can't have favorites. You can't have cliques. You know, everyone has to be treated fairly.
That's the most important thing. And again, when you think of the span of your career and in the years since when I started and where we are now, the society has changed dramatically. Look what just happened in this last year, how the society has changed. And we have to, if we don't move with that change, if we don't let go into the flow and be a part of it, then we're going to be left back. And that's not going to be good for our departments. We need to be right where society is. We may not agree with every change. It might not suit some of our personal preferences. But when we put on that badge and we take an oath, those personal preferences have to be put aside. We have to do what's best for the organization and for the community.
Absolutely. And so, as I said before, our job is to be at the bottom of the organizational chart. And that means that we're there to serve. And that also means that you're also there to treat everyone fairly and equally in your department. I've seen, departments where there's one individual or one station where there's that guy or that gal that's just not social and they're kind of ostracized. And I encourage us to move away from that. We should welcome everyone. We're a team, we're a family. And even though they might be a little quirky to you, you might not like them, your life may depend upon them one day. It's so important that we all, as I like to say, we should stop calling fire stations and call them fire houses and stay with the term firehouse because that's what they are. They're a house.
Right.
The house is where a family lives. It's where a family sleeps. It's where they gather. It's where they celebrate, where they are a family, and we are in a firehouse.
Very true. That's a great point. Because, in the atmosphere of blogging and podcasts and videocasts today, we hear a lot of talk about that we are one family. The new nonprofit that we formed here, I'm very lucky that, that the two volunteer members of our board of directors include Battalion Chief Andy Starnes and Firefighter Instructor Nick Higgins. And they bring their experience, they bring their time, and our goal for our nonprofit is but one thing, which is to assist firefighters and their families in dire need. And we hope to expand well enough to go to other first responders as well. That's our goal. And that's because we feel we are a family. And when we sent a check to a small volunteer firehouse in Kansas that had been irreparably damaged by a DUI driver in a heavy duty pickup that struck the building, irreparably damaged the building and destroyed two apparatus, the chief said to me, "Why are you doing this?" I said, "Because you need it. We're a family." He goes, "But you don't know us." I said, "That doesn't make any difference whether we've met or not. You're firefighters, we're firefighters. It's what we do. We are a family and we support each other at all times." And talking of the volunteer firehouse, I just found this one as I was just flipping the page. When volunteer firefighters who are not getting paid are not treated well and are exposed to poor leadership, the result is predictable. They will stop volunteering.
Yes.
And it's important that we include that because 70%+ of the country is protected by volunteers or part pay firefighters in this country.
And that's absolutely right. And I'll tell you what, the backstory there, and that you didn't touch on it, but it's in the book. And that is that I had a volunteer firefighter tell me that he wrote a grant for a small volunteer fire department. And that grant under an AFG grant was they got about $36,000, and they were able to buy air packs and, you know, turnout gear. And it was wonderful what he did and how he wrote that grant. And the fire chief, the volunteer fire chief, would not acknowledge to him that and say thanks. And, you know, and so in frustration, all he wanted to somebody was to say thanks, you know, that what you did got us this equipment here. And no, the fire chief would not acknowledge him at all. And he even brought up a training night, as he told me one time, he brought it up a training night. And then the chief immediately shot him down and said, I wrote that grant. And the chief didn't. The only thing the chief had supplied was the budget numbers, because obviously the firefighter didn't have access to that. And in frustration, he told me, I'm done. I was done. I was no longer going to volunteer there because of how I was treated. And then he told me later that a year later, that volunteer chief, after he's left the volunteer fire department, had the audacity to call him and ask him, would he consider writing another grant proposal for the new round of AFG grants? And he told him, no, I'm too busy. And so it was many years before that the department ever got another grant again. You know, and just, so it goes, but dovetails into what we just talked about, giving praise. But it also, you know, it also is what we're talking about now, Steve. And that is, you know, if you don't have good leadership in the department, especially a volunteer department where people are giving their time, they'll just go, they'll leave. And that's exactly what happened in a case like this. And I've heard that story, not that particular story, but I've heard examples of that type of story over and over and over from others that I've spoken with over the years, that it is the leadership. They don't leave their volunteer department. They leave their leadership.
Right. The about a year ago, we did a podcast on recruitment and retention for the volunteer service. And Chief Tony Correa from New Jersey made a great point. He said, Steve, it really should be retention and recruitment, because if you can't keep the members you have, how do you expect to gain anybody else?
That's exactly right.
And I said, you're absolutely right, Chief. That's exactly what it should be. You got to take care of the people who are there. And if you are, they'll be the ambassadors to bring in new blood to the department.
And that's exactly right. And so, I watch all these initiatives around the country on workforce solutions and trying to retain and recruit volunteer firefighters. And they have all these solutions, all these ideas, but it starts at the top with leadership. You know, and if you don't have good leadership, as I'm just going to be repetitive, they're not going to leave the volunteer fire department. They're going to leave the leadership.
Absolutely. Great point. And I'm going to end with this one, because this is probably, I just submitted an article earlier this week. And this is a quote: there are plenty of opportunities to promote your perception with the public. And my article is about the fact that we always have to be ambassadors of our department to the public at every opportunity. And that, I hadn't seen that quote yet when I wrote it on Monday, but now it just is the heart of what I wrote that article about. Is that?
Yeah, I call it the five P's. You should always pursue possibilities to promote your public perception. And you know, so you know what the average person is hit with messaging every day? Do you have any idea, Steve?
No.
The studies have shown that the average person receives about 30,000 messages a day. Whew. And I'm talking about the radio ads, the TV ads. You see an ad on TV, you walk into the grocery store, you see a sign, you drive down the street, you see a billboard, you're driving down the street, you see a bumper sticker. You know, the list of stuff goes on. You look on the internet, an ad pops up. The list of it goes on and on and on. The average person gets hit with about 30,000 estimated messages a day that is constant. And so We in the fire service have to rise above that also and get our messaging out. And we need to let the community know how valued their fire department should be in the community and the services that we provide. We're not the dark hole where money goes to into the fire department or in the city budget. We should be seen as part of the economic engine of any community. And the fact that we may have lost $5 million worth of property this past year, but we also saved $50 million worth of property. So that would have been a $50 million plus loss if we hadn't been there in the community as far as, you know, businesses and homes that pay taxes and so forth. So we're part of the economic engine of any community, and we're not this dark hole where money goes to and city politicians and others that administrate city budgets think, oh my God, look at all the money the fire department's getting. And they don't think they see any return on their investment. They do. We're part of an economic engine. And so we continually should be messaging that with pursuing possibilities to promote our public perception.
Right. There's always room. I always say there's always room for PR, positive PR. And right. It can be as simple as when you go to the grocery store to pick up the food for lunch and dinner for that shift. You have a couple of brochures in your pocket. So let's say you bump into a parent with a little kid and they see you all dressed up with your uniform and a badge. And most kids are going to, look, mommy, a firefighter. And you want to engage that mom and her child. And maybe you have a little pamphlet about Edith drills, or maybe you have a little thing about smoke detectors, or even a business card. Say, hi, yeah, well, I'm a firefighter. Do you want to be a firefighter when you grow up and stuff like that? Do you like firefighters? And just engage for 3 or 4 minutes. And you can't even imagine the impact that can have both on the parent and on that child.
Steve, I do a whole class if anybody's ever interested in ever having me come in on image management. And I show all the different ways of how we can promote our image as a fire department. And although we have a good image, we have to continually send that message to our community about right. The value that we bring as a fire department. And so, you know, because it just takes one bad event. And the next thing you know, you are in hot water.
Hero to zero.
Yeah, that was actually an article I wrote in Firehouse Magazine. I was titled that Hero to Zero. And it talked about how we were heroes after 9/11. And then, you know, a few years later, we're getting attacked, you know, during the housing crisis about our pensions and so forth. All of a sudden, we're the bad people, you know, while the guys on Wall Street were making all the fat cats, were making all the money, lost all the money. But now all of a sudden they want to attack us because we're getting a pension. So we went from heroes to zeros in a matter of less than 10 years. So I wrote that, but, you know, but I do a class and it's a pretty lengthy class. And as an example, I'll give you a little teaser. You know, a lot of departments will put out an annual review, the year in review. They put a document out showing their annual report from the year before. I don't do that. I put out a 4-minute video, showing the highlights from the year before, how many calls we run, our awards, significant events within the department, any purchase of any apparatus. You know, it's only 4 minutes long, because any longer than that, people are going to click off. But we put that to music, and then we push that out through social media. And even you can pay on Facebook to target market a geographic area, which we target our community here. And that shows up in your Facebook feed if you live in Champaign. So I could print thousands and thousands and thousands of copies, color copies, spend thousands upon thousands and thousands of dollars printing up those annual reports, hoping someone picks it up. Or I can put out a 4-minute video that targets you on your screen when you're looking at Facebook.
What a great idea. Just a totally different, but a one for the ages, because that's where we are now. Everybody's on that social media. So if you have the ability to create that conversation through social media in a positive manner, why not? It's a whole lot cheaper than, as you said, printing up all those reports on the hope that 100 people pick up out of 5,000 printing, you know, printing count. You know, so that's
4 minutes, you know, a fast pace. As I tell my people, put the video together, I want the wow effect when the citizens looking at my video.
You know, I think that's a great way of looking at it, because when the public see us responding on a call, no matter what the apparatus is, but the lights are on, the sirens are on, they most will take a moment, a breath, and say, those are the rescuers, those are the heroes going to help somebody. In that millisecond. That's what that they're going to think. And to me, that's the same attitude that I've used towards leadership, that we can plant a seed. And just like we're going to grow a veggie garden, and we put a seed in a little soil, we water it, make sure it gets some sun, and that sprout comes up. And then we take care of it more so it blooms and we get our veggies or the flowers that we're looking for. And I think that if we realize that every time we respond, or even if we're not responding with in an emergency fashion, where we're on the road and the public sees us, that's an opportunity. Even if you wave to somebody from the apparatus, if it's possible, if you see them through the window or they're looking at you, that's a way of keeping that positive image and placing it in their hearts for that moment, so that they see it and say, that's our fire department. That's the people who come to us when we call 911. And those are the people we want taking care of us. And if you can, we can do that and keep that message strong, I think we're accomplishing a real positive goal for the fire service in America.
I think it's important to realize, Steve, that if, I'll give an example. If you live in a community of 100,000 people, and I think you already know the answer to this, but how many people in the course of a year in 100,000 people in a community population are going to call 911?
I'd say probably in the 30 to 40% range.
You think so? 30, 40,000 people are going to call?
I think, yeah, but I don't, I'm not saying they're all valid calls. I'm just saying they're placing the calls to 911, because we know that 911 is often misused. I'll use a polite term.
So I would differ with you on that. Okay. I think it's probably 2 or 3% of the people are going to call 911, because a lot of those are repeat customers.
Right.
And a lot of people don't even call 911. Because of the fact that there's a sprinkler alarm that comes in, or a fire alarm. So it comes in through some type of technology.
Right.
So my point I'm trying to make is that the majority of people are not going to be exposed to the fire department in the course of a year, other than they see you get the best parking spot in front of the shopping market. And so it's why it's so important that while you're in that supermarket, as you just said, that when you're going to interact with that small child, if that small child wants to interact with you, that you need to interact with them. It's so important that you're an ambassador roving around with that roving billboard as a fire truck, that you do the right thing when you're out on the streets. And again, it's so important that we promote our messaging to the community about the value that we bring, because the majority of people are not going to interact with us during the course of a year.
That's true. That's a good point. What else did you have on mind to when we first talked about setting up the appointment? It was going to be, you know, you had a couple of topics that you were really interested in touching on, and I'm glad we've touched on health, because that's when we share, we talk about leadership. Can we close with one more that's really dear to you?
Yeah. So, you know, if you look at the final chapter of my book, Fully Involved Leadership, I talk about that you don't get to write the final chapter of your career. It's your firefighters that do. And you might think that you have the ability by your actions, what you did, to write your legacy before you retire or after you retire. You don't get that right. Your firefighters get that right. And they will either venerate you or they will vilify you, as I like to say. They will write your final chapter of your career. And I've been in departments already where I've heard of names that I never met the person, but they still talk about that person in either glowing terms, or they talk about them in just derogatory terms, that they were hated. And I've been in departments already where you could probably hold a retirement ceremony in a phone booth for the number of people that would come for that person. So it's how you, your actions and how you treat your employees and your firefighters through the course of your career that will determine how those firefighters write that final chapter of your career. And so it's so important that we treat our people right. We treat them well. We help them grow. And it's all the things that we have talked about here today. And they will write that final chapter, and they will either vilify you or they will venerate you based upon how you performed.
Well, then we all have to be very careful of how we conduct ourselves and keep ourselves aiming for the best of everybody and trying to promote that and make sure that people want to do what they're doing, not being made to do what they're doing, that it comes from the heart.
Absolutely. You know, you got to like people, quote unquote, if you want to be in a leadership position. You can't hate people. I had a fire chief tell me one time that he's a benevolent, I asked him his leadership style, and he told me he's a benevolent dictator. And I said, I don't know what that looks like, but I certainly don't subscribe to that. So the old saying, beatings will continue until morale improves, is not a good way to run a fire department.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Well, Chief, again, our sincere thanks for your time, your wisdom, your knowledge, and sharing with us again. Look forward to the new book, especially with that little preview that you gave us. It's a nice little tease.
Yeah.
And looking to see some of the other changes that you come up with.
Yeah. So, you know, if anybody wants to learn more about programs I offer for your department, I also do Zoom. I just did one with a department with 30 company chief officers the other day in Washington State. We do professional development by Zoom. If anybody's interested in that, you can go to my website, fullyinvolvedleadership.com. You can also download my free report there on the top 10 things that get fire chiefs in trouble. It's a free report. And so, but if you're interested in any of those programs, go to fullyinvolvedleadership.com and you can look at the classes I offer, the programs I offer. There are also, I have 4 different books on there for sale. And, or if you just want to write me an email.
That'll be great. And I can tell you folks, he is a quick respondent. Even as a chief of a big department, he replies to his emails very quickly. Again, our sincere thanks, Chief. Wishing you all the best, and look forward to the new book and maybe coming back again in season 6.
It's been an honor to be with you today, Steve.
Thank you, Chief. Stay safe and stay well. Folks, thanks. If you're watching the video, this will be the end of the video. If you're listening to the audio, we'll be right back after these words. Thank you for tuning in. We sincerely appreciate it. Stay safe and stay well. Bye-bye. You're listening to 5 Alarm Task Force. Hi, this is Steve. If you're a regular listener, you already know about our nonprofit that we started last October, 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. And although it is the parent company for the podcast, 5 Alarm Task Force, it is also the nonprofit that we've dedicated to you, our listeners, firefighters, and hopefully as we grow, other first responders, EMS, and law enforcement as well. And our goal is simple. We want to help you in dire straits. We want to help firefighters and or their families in dire straits. And the only way we can do this and continue to do so is with your help. So one of the things, as you know, you may have heard or seen in our store on our website at www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org is t-shirts that we sold out of relatively quickly. And we've talked about what we could do in the store to help promote a little more swag for you and bring in some more donations. So what we're considering is, and we're still looking at the numbers, but what we're hoping to do is at a certain comfortable level, for every donation at that level, you'll receive a free t-shirt. That's it. You don't have to go into the store to buy it. You know that on our homepage and various pages on the website, you'll see that big, beautiful picture of a silver Q siren. And anytime you see that picture, you can just click on that picture and that will bring you to our donation form. And you can choose to do a one-time donation. You can choose a monthly donation, a once-a-year donation, and you can use any credit or debit card. You can use your checking account. You can use an ACH transfer, and that will come directly to us from our good friends, our new promotional partners at EFT Corporation. So, we'll announce as soon as we're all set what the numbers are going to be, but we hope that will be a little bit more of an incentive for you to help us out, because every dollar that we raise for the foundation account turns around and goes out to a small volunteer fire department or a firefighter and or his or her family who find themselves in dire straits. As you may have heard already, From October when we started through about a month ago, we have already donated $1,700 to firefighter-based some sort of emergencies. A couple of them were to volunteer, small volunteer fire departments that had major problems. One was burnt down, one was their station and apparatus were destroyed, and the others have gone to families of our brothers or sisters who have paid the ultimate price. So that's our goal. That's our job, is to take care of you, our brothers and sisters. So we hope that you'll stay tuned. We'll have this announcement before our summer break, and we'll have the material in the store. You'll be able to purchase it. And then again, when we set that level, if you meet that level with the donation, you'll be able to get a free T-shirt. So that's what's going on here at 5 Alum Task Force Corp. Keep listening to the podcast. We'll be running here right through the end of June until we take our break. And hopefully we'll be back for our sixth season very soon. So thank you all for listening. We really appreciate it. And stay tuned. There's more to come here on 5 Alum Task Force. Stay safe and stay well. And that's my view.
Remember when you were a young boy or girl and someone bullied or teased you? Where do you most often turn? Like many of us, you turn to your family. If you're a first responder, you probably no longer worry about those childhood problems. But there are plenty more that can affect us. Lack of sleep, the tragedy and horror we often see, even life's everyday stumbling blocks, like family illness, money, job problems, and more. So where do you turn now? Your gut reaction might be to keep it to yourself and not tell anyone about the hell you're going through. However, that's not going to help you or anyone else. Instead, you could start with your second family, someone you work with at the firehouse, on the ambulance, or at the station. You spend a lot of time with them, and most of them understand many of the problems you're dealing with. Reach out to a coworker or an officer you trust. Speak to clergy at your house of worship, or contact your SISM team. Don't keep it inside, gnawing away at you. That's not good for you or anyone around you. Know that there are people who stand ready to listen to you and help you without passing judgment. Remember, to carry out your oath to protect life and property, the first life you have to care for is your own. Brought to you by 5 Alarm Task Force, along with the Critical Incident Stress Management Team in your area, close by and confidential.
In October of 2020, in the midst of the pandemic, we launched our new nonprofit company, 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. Our motto is one family, one mission, first responders helping each other. Our goal? To assist our brothers and sisters in dire need. Since then, we have dispersed $1,700 to firefighters and or their families to assist them in their trying times. We are committed to continuing this mission, but to do so, we need your help. So many of you are listening or viewing our podcasts or videocasts, not just in the USA, but around the world. Between Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, we have over 5,000 followers and friends. What if 50% of you donated $5? Yes, just $5 to our cause. That would generate nearly $12,000 for our foundation fund. Imagine what we could do with that in helping not only our brother and sister firefighters, but those in EMS and law enforcement. If you are in public safety, you know of what we speak. We love the jobs we do, and we do them to answer the call we receive to be firefighters, paramedics, police officers, etc. But in fulfilling our tasks, we often see tragedy, not only for those we serve, but to those who serve with us. To help, please visit our website at www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org and select Donate from the top menu. You can use a credit card or debit card, a check, or even a cash ACH transfer. From the entire team at 5 Alarm Task Force Corp, thank you. Stay safe and stay well.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
And that wraps this episode of 5 Alum Task Force, brought to you by 5 Alum Task Force Corp. One family, one mission, first responders helping each other. We'd like to thank our guest, Chief Gary Ludwig, for joining us to discuss leadership in firefighter health. Did you know you can find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for 5 Alum Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training, LLC, and the Firehouse Tribune, and our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Centers, Nesta Bars, and we welcome the EFT Corporation as well, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to info@5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 5alarmtaskforce, on Facebook at @stephen.s.green.1, and on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel, 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcasts, our new nonprofit foundation, and our blog on our website, www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.